Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we will share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, Words to Live By, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. As this podcast airs, the 2022 November election results have been in the books for about 3 weeks. At least most of the results are in the books. As the contentious debates continue, let's go back over 40 years to some of Ronald Reagan's thoughts expressed in his radio addresses on voting, and on another issue, the possibilities of voter fraud with postcard registration. So, let's listen to former Governor Ronald Reagan in 1977. And in the second half of this podcast, we'll hear from President Reagan on the subject of elections in 1988. Now, let's go back to 1977. In recent years, when we hear about ways to amend and expedite the voter registration process, it turns out Citizen Reagan was deeply concerned over 40 years ago. Let's listen.
It is time for Washington to hear from the people about the instant voter registration plan, which seems to be sailing through Congress with the wind at its back and only voter fraud ahead. I'll be right back. It's funny how sometimes a bill of major importance will take on an invisible cloak and slip through the halls of Congress with very few people aware of its passage. The Carter administration is promoting an election bill, which I commented on a while back. Without repeating myself, I'd like to tell you about one part of that so-called reform which could make a mockery of our entire democratic process. The proposal is to allow any adult to walk into a voting place on election day, show a driver's license, a social security card, or some other identification, and be instantly eligible to vote. Proponents of the proposal say this will not increase the possibility of voter fraud. Proponents of the proposal are either living in a dream world or are cynically dishonest. Voter fraud exists now, despite the registration laws, provisions to check eligibility, and the presence at the polls of poll watchers on guard against cheaters. In one southern state, 25 election officials have been indicted on charges of fraud in the last election. In a challenged congressional election in another state, the winner received the votes of oil stations, warehouses, at least two city parks, and some vacant lots. And the idea that a Social Security card is proof of identity doesn't work. A woman in Chicago has just been convicted of welfare fraud who had 50 Social Security cards. Social Security officials have long admitted that duplicate cards are probably held by millions of people. But about that cloak of invisibility, the Senate Rules Committee has been given testimony from the career lawyer who heads the election unit of the Justice Department Criminal Division, charging that the election reform bill has a tremendous potential for fraud. And Senator Strom Thurmond presented a wire to the committee by the chief of the Public Integrity Section of the Justice Department's Criminal Division, saying the proposed instant registration would increase the opportunity for election fraud. With the issue somewhat in doubt of passage in the Senate committee, shenanigans took place. A request to have the Attorney General and others come before the committee was blocked. And on May 12th, the committee sent the bill to the full Senate by a 5-4 vote. This was done after a committee member who might have been the fifth no vote was called from the room by Vice President Mondale. Over in the House, the Administration Committee was hearing testimony by election experts all over the land who are frightened of the bill. The head of Chicago's election board, where they know a lot about cheating, said, quote, "It will erode the integrity of our elections since it is totally lacking in any safeguards on the front end at the time of registration and voting," unquote. He predicted congestion and long lines delaying the voting on election day. Similar testimony was given by the Democratic chairwoman of Philadelphia's City Commission. When other witnesses, all Democrats, appeared before the commission to oppose the bill, the Democratic members of the commission were all absent. One staffer, when asked why they weren't there, laughed and said, "They don't want to hear this," unquote. They certainly didn't want to hear Richard Barnett of Chicago, a black political organizer, tell them the bill would make blacks vulnerable to exploitation by big city machines. The House committee sent the measure to the floor by a 17-8 vote. Now it's time to write your congressman. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Another voting issue that concerned Citizen Reagan was postcard registration. So much so, he devoted an entire radio address to the subject in January 1977. He asks a great pointed question at the end of this radio address. Listen carefully, you'll love it. Here then is Ronald Reagan on postcard registration, January 1977.
Is a postcard really the answer to voter apathy? or have we opened the door to wholesale voting by tombstones and empty lots? I'll be right back. Everyone talks about the weather, but no one does anything about it, or so the saying goes. For the last few years, maybe not everyone, but quite a few have been talking about the number of Americans who don't take advantage of their hard-fought right to vote. Unfortunately, some decided to do something about it. In my own state, California, the legislature, with great fanfare, adopted postcard registration. There are now 14 out of the 50 states in which voter registration can be accomplished by mailing in a postcard. The reasoning behind this is that the low voter turnout is due to the slight difficulty in going to a registrar of voters. Of course, no one has pointed out that the same individual who finds this an insurmountable obstacle might also find going to the polls too inconvenient. In California, now that you can register by postcard, we had nearly 500,000 fewer eligible voters register than in 1972, and a little over 1 million fewer actually voting. In the 14 states that have adopted this method of registering, 8 had decreases in registration and 6 had a slight increase, but 12 reported a decline in the number who actually voted. In Texas, one of the two showing an increase, registration went up by over 1 million, but there was no appreciable gain in the number of people who voted. In spite of these questionable benefits, you can bet that Congress is going to try to pass a national postcard registration plan. The argument, of course, will be that citizens yearning to vote are prevented from doing so by the horrendous barrier of having to appear before a registrar. The answer to that is one the American general gave to the German demand for surrender at the Battle of Bastogne during World War II. Quote, nuts, unquote. It's true that a great many citizens don't register, and many who are registered don't vote. Some just can't be bothered, but too many are disenchanted with the political process. There's a disillusionment with government, a feeling that government has failed us, and that the political parties no longer have meaning. Too many Americans feel government has grown so big that they as individuals can have no effect on it. The answer to this, and the responsibility of both parties, is to show that only by participating can they help change the things that are wrong. Government by the people won't work if the people won't work at it. When Congress tries to present postcard registration as the great solution, will they tell us it will also be a nightmare leading to another bureaucratic monster with a cost estimated at $100 million and up? I'm sure they won't tell us how much it will open the door to massive voter fraud, always a threat to the democratic process. The experience in the states where postcard registration is already in effect gives proof that fraud will be attempted and that there is virtually no protection against it under this system. In one of the 14 states, one individual sent in 108 applications and only by accident was the fraud uncovered. But he or she was never identified. One application turned out to be a city park, hardly a qualified voter. Another was a gas station. There was a boarded-up warehouse, a power company, vacant lots, and a playground, among others. Why don't we try reverse psychology and make it harder to vote? That might also make it more desirable and attractive. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
More about our mighty election process from the 40th president right after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now, back to the story. In the elections of November 1988, President Reagan watched the presidential battle between Vice President George H.W. Bush and Governor Michael Dukakis. In an eloquent and inspiring address, he chose to speak to the American people via the radio, his favorite medium, and communicate the importance of voting and why. It's a celebration of our fundamental democratic rights, and it's powerful. Let's listen.
My fellow Americans, after a vibrant and fractious and exciting year, we will at last be going to the polls on Tuesday and exercising our most important right, the right to choose our future, the right to vote. There's nothing more glorious than the blessing that is our God-given freedom to choose those who will lead us, and there's no sight more moving than a lone American walking into that voting booth, casting a ballot in secret, and thereby determining the destiny of this great country. And make no mistake, this year at the top of the ballot is crucial. Don't listen to the cynical pundits who tells you this election isn't about the issues. No, yes, it is. In fact, it's about more than the issues. It's about the direction this country is going to take over the next 4 years and beyond. It's about the kind of economy we want, the kind of defense we want, the kind of values we want. The choice is yours. But yes, my fellow Americans, there is a choice, a very important choice. A vote for Vice President George Bush is a vote for optimism, an expression of faith in the American experiment. It's an endorsement of what we've done these past 8 years and of our heartfelt promise that tomorrow and the days to come will be brighter still. No one knows better than a man who sought the highest office in this land what an awesome responsibility it is to be the vessel of change, the selection of a people in control of their present and future. It's truly humbling, and I'd like once again to thank all of you who placed your faith in me, and I'd like to tip my hat to those who supported others but took their responsibility as citizens of a democratic society seriously and with care. I've heard your voices, like those before me and those after me. I've heard your voices, and I hope I have justified your faith. You know, the two men who wished to succeed me on Tuesday know also so many others, tens of thousands of candidates on state and local and school board ballots from Hawaii to Maine. And there are ballot propositions on issues from gun control to the size of cows' stalls. And yes, every one of these choices is vital. Everyone is crucial. Everyone gives you an opportunity to say, this is what I want the future to look like. This is the country I want to live in. And I believe you must take every choice from county sheriff to president of the United States with equal seriousness. That's because our system depends upon you, every single one of you. Alexander Hamilton, one of our founding fathers, said it best. He said, no laws have any validity or binding force without the consent and approbation of the people. But what we've learned in this course of human history is that dictators may coerce and tyrants may control, but the people who obey them do so only because they are threatened with bodily harm to themselves or their families if they do not. These societies are not just and they're not good, and perhaps most telling, they do not work. They do not work because the people have no voice. They have no say. Their elections are cynical frauds, sick jokes. Did you know that in the most recent election in the Stalinist nation of Albania, the vote tally was 1,820,652 to 1? Yes, without the fundamental freedom of the right to choose, hope disintegrates, expectations for the future suffer, and life itself becomes gray and dreary. And that means a weak economy, low standards of living, high infant mortality, and general gloom. Now, compare that kind of society with the democratic societies where the last two centuries have seen the expansion of opportunity and freedom, steady increases in standards of living, and a consistent belief that things will only get better. And why? Because we who live in democracy are all our own masters, and we know that the future is ours to build, that the only limits upon us are those we place on ourselves. You can imagine how very moved I was last May to be in the Lenin Hills at a podium before the audience of students at Moscow State University, speaking to them about the wonder and glory of human freedom. Think of those students. Only if they're very lucky and rise high in the Communist Party will any one of them ever have the influence on the course of their country's history and world history that each of you can have just by going into the voting booth. So, my fellow Americans, on Tuesday, breathe in the intoxicating air of human freedom every polling place and voting booth in this nation, and reaffirm the words in the Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal. Thank you until next week. God bless you and God bless America. My fellow Americans, after a vibrant and fractious and exciting year, we will at last be going to the polls on Tuesday and exercising our most important right, the right to choose our future, the right to vote. There's nothing more glorious than the blessing that is our God-given freedom to choose those who will lead us. And there's no sight more moving than a lone American walking into that voting booth, casting a ballot in secret, and thereby determining the destiny of this great country. And make no mistake, the choice this year at the top of the ballot is crucial. Don't listen to the cynical pundits who tell you this election isn't about the issues. Oh, yes, it is. In fact, it's about more than the issues. It's about the direction this country's going to take over the next 4 years and beyond. It's about the kind of economy we want, the kind of defense we want, the kind of values we want. The choice is yours. But yes, my fellow Americans, there is a choice, a very, very important choice. A vote for Vice President George Bush is a vote for optimism, an expression of faith in the American experiment. It's an endorsement of what we've done these past 8 years and of our heartfelt promise that tomorrow and the days to come will be brighter still. No one knows better than a man who has sought the highest office in this land what an awesome responsibility it is to be the vessel of change, the selection of a people in control of their present and their future. It's truly humbling. And I'd like once again to thank all of you who placed your faith in me, and I'd like to tip my hat to those who supported others but took their responsibility as citizens of a democratic society seriously and with care. I have heard your voices, like those before me and those after me. I have heard your voices, and I hope I have justified your faith. You know the two men who wished to succeed me on Tuesday. You know also so many others. Tens of thousands of candidates on state and local and school board ballots from Hawaii to Maine. And there are ballot propositions on issues from gun control to the size of cow stalls. And yes, every one of these choices is vital. Every one is crucial. Every one gives you an opportunity to say, this is what I want the future to look like. This is the country I want to live in. And I believe you must take every choice from county sheriff to president of the United States with equal seriousness. That's because our system depends upon you, every single one of you. Alexander Hamilton, one of our founding fathers, said it best. No laws have any validity or binding force without the consent and approbation of the people. Well, what we've learned in the course of human history is that dictators may coerce and tyrants may control, but the people who obey them do so only because they are threatened with bodily harm to themselves or their families if they do not. These societies are not just and they're not good. And perhaps most telling, they do not work. They do not work because the people have no voice. They have no say. Their elections are cynical frauds, sick jokes. Did you know that in the most recent election in the Stalinist nation of Albania, the vote tally was 1,820,652 to 1. Yes, without the fundamental freedom of the right to choose, hope disintegrates, expectations for the future suffer, and life itself becomes gray and dreary. And that means a weak economy, low standards of living, high infant mortality, and general gloom. Now, compare that kind of society with the democratic societies where the last two centuries have seen the expansion of opportunity and freedom, steady increases in standards of living, and a constant belief that things will get only better. And why? Because we who live in democracy are all our own masters, and we know that the future is ours to build, and that the only limits upon us are those we place on ourselves. You can imagine how very moved I was last May to be in the Lenin Hills at a podium before an audience of students at Moscow State University, speaking to them about the wonder and glory of human freedom, individual freedom. Think of those students. Only if they're very lucky and rise high in the Communist Party will any one of them ever have the influence on the course of their country's history and world history that each of you can have just by going into the voting booth. So, my fellow Americans, on Tuesday, breathe in the intoxicating air of human freedom in every polling place and voting booth in this nation, and reaffirm the words in the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal. Thank you, and until next week, God bless you, and God bless America.
Thank you for listening.
For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.